You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today I have Brian Gavin on with me. Brian is a seasoned tech exec who has made the brave leap to go and launch his own new venture, which is still very much in stealth mode, but we're excited to see what it's going to be. So Brian, welcome to the crazy world of entrepreneurship and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Brandon.
Well, why don't we start off by telling everyone who you are and some about your background and as much as you can, what you're up to.
Yeah, absolutely. So really excited to be here. And I've spent the last 15 plus years in technology startups. I started my career at Indeed, the global job search platform. It wasn't at the time a behemoth that it is now. I was a little less than 100 people and got my roots in customer success, account management, and data and analytics, built out global teams, and went through the transaction ultimately to recruit, which was an awesome experience. We scaled to about 5,000 people, and that type of hyper growth was just incredible to go on to. It's hold on to the seat of your pants type of growth. And then the last 6 years, just up until now, I spent in the role of president at Global Edit. It is a digital asset management platform focused on content management and really was a Swiss Army knife for the company, helping to close some of our biggest deals, handle relationships with our investors, of course. And one of the big projects that we focused on was actually rebuilding the software from the ground up. And for anyone who is building technology knows what a challenge building one piece of software is, but then add in the culmination of your legacy bid and migrating data. And it was quite the experience.
I was going to say tech debt's quite a fun challenge to build through for sure. So, but anyway, sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so we got through the tech debt. I made the decision to move out of the company, and I'm currently in incubation and building mode for the next startup. So really excited about that endeavor, and it'll be in content and accessibility and how we interact with the digital world. So really excited about that. And I am hopeful that some of the experiences I had will take with me, but as we all know, each new company, new challenges. Each day is a new challenge. So,
yeah, I've founded four companies now at this point. So I know what you're talking about. It's a struggle, and every company is like a special little snowflake, right? Where they're all very different from each other. Even if you've done it before, it's still a challenge. And I'm super familiar with Indeed and Recruit. My first company, Talent Rover, being a staffing recruiting software. And now one of my latest companies, Assemble, being a staffing and recruiting software, we know those guys very well. What did you do at Indeed and at Recruit?
Yeah, so at Indeed, my final role, I was responsible for the business analytics group, supporting employer data and how our sales and account management teams leveraged that, how we leveraged internal productivity data to make teams like our call centers and our customer support groups more effective. And it was a culmination of engineers and business analysts that, you know, sat and gathered requirements.
Nice. So you think, like, in your career, are you more sales focused, management focused, engineering focused? Like, what's your special powers?
Yeah, it's special powers are always the jack of trades, but I would say put me in front of a customer or a prospect all day. So sales, I love it. I'm a natural people person. But I also just have a curiosity about the technology. When we started building out our technology arm for the business intelligence group at Indeed, it was I'd never written a SQL query before, but I, you know, had to get at least to a high comfort level, so I had credibility when sitting in with engineers that, you know, we knew what we were talking about. So balance those two pieces. You got best of both worlds for me. What about you?
You know, it was funny. Early in my career, I got some really bad advice that luckily I didn't follow. Maybe it's not bad advice, but it was bad advice for me. Where I was told I need to be a specialist. I needed to find something and just really go and figure that out. And I'm like, I'm so uninterested in that. Where I wanted to be a generalist. I want to understand all facets of a business. I want to touch everything. I want to understand how the whole thing works. Because I knew I eventually wanted to run companies. I didn't know exactly what that meant, but that's where it went. So, you know, I've done a lot of sales and I love selling. I like being in front of customers. I like the sales part that I really like is the relationship building, understanding what they need, why they need it, and trying to help them solve that. For me, that's extremely rewarding. So my whole sales process has always been like, I want to learn and help you. And if I can help you, yeah, ultimately, I'm going to win as well. And that's worked really well for me throughout the years. I was really focused for a while on being like the operational process guy, because I'm very meticulously organized and detailed and all of that from an organization standpoint. I learned, actually don't like being the process guy. I'm good at it, but it's very, very draining. I'm a tried and true introvert, but at work, I like to be the evangelist and driving things and all of that. So I think it's why I eventually figured out I really wanted to be an entrepreneur. I really wanted to build companies so instead of just helping people solve something, I can help, you know, bigger things be solved. So I've been building companies since 2009, and just love it. And a lot of people ask me, like, after Talent Rover exit, they're like, why are you doing this again? And I'm like, why would I not do this again? Like, it's just,
right,
it's who I am. It's what I love.
Yeah, I'm the ideas guy in the room. I have no shortage of ideas to bring to the table. And then let me create the vision. That's highly interesting to me. So I think I can relate to that aspect of being that founder and the journeyman of the group.
Yeah, and you got to ultimately execute. So you got to balance it out with vision and execution. But I've learned over the years to really find people that are better at the things that I don't want to do. Not necessarily that I'm not good at, but the things I just don't want to do that they like doing. And that's a really good balance and a lesson that has helped me very well of saying, you know, I don't like creating processes and I certainly don't like following them. Can I find someone who loves that side of it and have them own it and responsible for it and then have them manage me, if you will? And that works in my world.
Hire people that are smarter than you. That's what I was always told.
Yeah. Well, with all the things that you've done, I mean, you've obviously had to run into some challenges and obstacles and things that either nearly killed you or just were very difficult. And especially right now with starting to build a new company, you're going to have challenges. What are some of the stories that you think come to mind about those things and how you got through them?
Yeah. The good thing about the challenges that we all run into is I look at them as learning lessons, right? So they're not going to kill you. So, just at a little bit of a macro level, you know, some of the challenges that I faced every day, and I'm sure everyone else is facing, the barrier to entry to launching new software is, you know, running, in AWS, you don't have to make that leap and jump into a huge financial commitment. We're all probably, going to our VC and PE partners, where cash and cash readiness to distribute, although it seems like there's a lot of built up equity, ready to be distributed. And, the buzzword of AI or synthetic and simulation of technology or content, those challenges pushed on my day to day, all the time. A couple specific challenges, that I ran into, one, just in terms of, the technology over the course of time that I've implemented, it's changed so much to the likes now that you can build your own proprietary software through the likes of glue coding, right? And have run into some pretty big challenges or learning experiences, whether it's implementing a database, implementing particular tagging components of how you store your information. One particular instance that I can lean into a little bit was I was involved, you know, in my previous role, we had the responsibility of migrating content and keeping our customers very satisfied. And so we chose a particular database that fit our needs to go really fast because it solved a lot of the problems that your traditional DBA would solve. We didn't have that in-house. And 2 years into the project, we come to learn that that wasn't right for what we needed, for what our company was, for the types of information we wanted to process. And, you know, it was some tense conversations in the leadership room. One, to recognize, you know, I think anytime you make a mistake, it's like, can I even admit that I made the mistake? But then it, you know, was a remigration of data. And so that challenge had multitude effect. There was a financial implication, there was a time implication, every mistake, those common things. So that one sticks out, you know, just as we lean into technology, the topic of technology specifically. Other challenges that I've run into, probably, you know, from a hiring perspective, having to go through a couple rounds of like, what do we actually need to solve the problem? And that's ranged from getting it into an interview and being like, wait, now that I've talked to several smart people, I actually have a totally different need than I thought I originally had. Or even getting people in the seat and realizing that they aren't the right person and having to, you know, move them out in an elegant, professional manner, but so that it's right for them and it's best for the business.
Yeah, I mean, that hiring component and getting that right. You know, I know with Talent Rover, my first company, like I was just kind of shooting from the hip and yeah, I think we need this because everyone else hires this. We probably need that person. Let's go ahead and hire that person. And learning like the job, what I call the job design of designing a job to actually solve what you're really trying to solve is an area you can't shortcut. You really got to focus on. Like if you're going to make one of the most expensive decisions you can make as a business owner or an exec, hiring someone, because it's not only expensive to go through the recruiting effort, it's expensive to onboard them and train them, and it's expensive to replace them and deal with the fallout when you are replacing them, what that all looks like, and the downtime and rinse and repeat type thing. It's the most expensive part of running a business. And shortcutting it and saying, yeah, I think that I need that. I'm going to go online. I'm going to find someone else's job description. I'm going to copy it. I'm going to paste it. That becomes my job description. That's who I'm going to go hire. And I'm going to find someone who remotely has those skill set and get them placed. Like that is like the biggest recipe for disaster, where if you spend more time in the beginning saying, okay, why do I really think I need to hire this person? What happens if I don't hire this person? Like, how does this work get done? And if you really get to the point where the work's not going to get done, or if it is going to get done, it's going to be terrible, then you're starting to say, okay, I do need this person. But then to really qualify and quantify, what's the person going to be doing and why are they going to be doing it? And what the impact's going to be? Like, what am I going to get from hiring this person? And it could be, you know, hiring a salesperson. Great. Here's a sales target. They're going to produce X amount of revenue and, you know, that's going to do X, Y, Z for us. Or, you know, there's a book from Dan Martell that I read that he says you hire people to buy back your time. So like, especially as a founder or like one of the few first people in a startup, like you get to the point where you're just out of time and out of capacity. And who can you hire to take off things off of your plate that can go and execute on it? And some of that is like, just needs, and other parts of it is like we were talking about, you know, superpower or special power. Some of it is like finding people who like to do the things that you don't like to do and they'll excel at it. So you can go do the things you like to do that you're going to excel at and take the business to the next level. But that whole piece of figuring out who to hire and why, if you get that wrong, like you're just wasting money and time and adding more gray hairs.
Yeah. So can I ask you a question? When, you know, the concept of moving fast, right? Because that's typically where you make mistakes, right? How have you moved at a very fast pace, but also had a chance to step outside of your own fishbowl and had that aha moment to be like, that's, you know, that's the problem that I need to solve.
Like how do I think about it? Like how did I figure
Yeah,
that
yeah.
out?
What do you have a methodology or?
You know, early days was not thinking about it and just continuing to hire and saying, oh no, it's that person's problem. I hired the wrong person. Let me go find a different person, blah, blah, blah. It's not me. It's not my poor inability to actually be able to determine what the business really needs. So I think after you do that enough and realize, okay, there's something going on here. But then when you hire the right person in the right role, they know what they're supposed to be doing. They know what you think they're supposed to be doing. Then it starts to change and you start to see a different level of performance and you get a different level of value out of that person. And earlier in my career, I might've said, well, I just hired a rock star. I got really lucky. Now it's less about that. And you truly do have like rock stars and A players and all of that. Those people are definitely exist, but sometimes a B player could be an A player if you set them up for success in the right way. If it's clear, if they know what they're supposed to be doing. I just did an interview last week, actually, and we were talking about this whole topic as far as executive communication. And like one of my strengths is not communication. I've gotten better at it because I've been very intentional about no one actually lives in my head. It's a pretty terrifying place. So probably thank goodness they don't live in my head. But, you know, I have high expectations. I've always been like, just go crush it, just go get it done and like push myself to the ninth degree. And not everyone's wired in the same way. It doesn't mean they can't accomplish big things. It's just not how they work. So I've always assumed like people get it. They'll work as hard as me and they'll work the same way and all that. And, you know, people just are different with how they work and how they prioritize and all that. And that's not bad or worse than how I do it. But if I don't communicate expectations, if I don't communicate things like this is what I am going to perceive as you being successful, you can run a problem where someone who you hire thinks that, you know, you need to be impressed and you want all of this stuff and all of that. And my personality, I don't like when people try to impress me. Like it drives me crazy. What I like is they go deliver what I hired them for. That's going to impress me. And then we'll fill in the rest. But if I'm not clear with what I think will make you successful, and if I'm also not clear as to here's what your job really is, then whoever I hire is going to be set up for failure. But also, I'm going to have a hard time finding who that person is I should hire.
Yeah. No, you mentioned something before that was, it stuck out to me, which is like, you know, when you land that great hire and they excel in the role. And I think the flip side of the challenges I've had is that A player who's in a role that they're crushing it. I have one instance in mind specifically is they leave the organization, which, you know, some folks are like, oh, they're leaving the organization, you know, whatever. I always wish people the best of luck because, you know, having your own career journey is honestly your own personal journey as much as you are there to contribute to a company. I had one gentleman who worked for me for many years, and he had a multitude of tasks. I mean, it was just like we built the job around his skill sets almost. He came in to handle onboarding, and he was such a rock star that we grew the role responsibilities to be something that was, you know, quite vast and significant for the organization. And when he left, it was like, well, how do we replace this person? And the answer was, you know, and it took actually a minute to figure this out, but like, you don't. You actually have created a multitude of needs for the business that you know, we should look at backfilling in a more strategic way, just so one, we limit the risk of monopolizing where things get done, but also, you know, some of the feedback was, you know, this role became something much larger than was expected. So that was the second piece, which is when you're a small team, it's pretty easy to have these direct one-on-one conversations like, hey, Brandon, here are your responsibilities. We're going to have a stand-up, yada, yada, yada. You get 10 or 15, 20, 30, 100 people. And how do you maintain that control that you had? Because I think our job as leaders is to relinquish control.
Totally. And when that rock star player leaves, it's pretty soul crushing. Like there's an immediate sense of panic and like, what do I do? But I'm also on the same mindset as you. Is like, I like people to expand their career and go and grow. And ultimately, I like for them to come back. Like the door is always open. As long as you like leave in the right way and don't burn any bridges and all that stuff. That stuff, you know, is so incredibly important that I think, you know, I've seen less of that. I was watching something on the news the other day and they were talking about how now people quit and they'll film themselves quitting. And like they post it all over social media, like thinking that's a great thing. I think that's incredibly bad. But the other point that you were talking about, as far as your small company and have the direct access and then you get bigger, like that's also a skill set change and that's a mindset change. And, you know, there's a lesson that I've learned that a lot of people have talked about is, you know, the people that help you get from A to B aren't necessarily the people that help you get from B to D. And that's okay. And you should build a culture where it's known that that's okay. That doesn't mean those people can't grow with the organization. It might mean, though, that there's different opportunities and different people that need to come in to help you reorganize and structure and create systems and processes so that you can manage the business effectively. Because going from a 5-person company to a 100-person company, it's a whole different world.
Totally agree. One of the, you know, ahead of time, I was thinking about one of the biggest changes we're seeing with the technology that has probably outpaced where our teams are skilled to be at, and even our buyer, right? I think there's a piece of my observation that our technology that we as technologists bring to the table is almost outpaced where our consumer is, but it's also stretching where our team members are at. And you know, the likes of a call center, rapidly changing, the role of what sales ops, now RevOps, has brought to life. I mean, these are pieces where you talk about wanting to move fast. I mean, these RevOps wasn't even on my radar from a vocabulary standpoint, probably prior to this year. And it's a whole new DNA of what it means to be effective and how you leverage and grow your team, which obviously you have vast experience in. And how our call centers, you know, go about, you know, how do you hire for these roles when augmented reality and generative AI, I mean, you call my bank today, it sounds like I'm talking to a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating. Like, you know, definitely in the RevOps stuff, all the stuff we're doing at Place, like the whole reason why we're doing it is to solve the needs and the challenges that we live with when scaling Talent Rover to the global organization that it became, where, you know, like I had individual people doing very specific parts of the process because you needed to, where now you can use technology to automate the entire thing. And it's, you know, it's essentially one of the reasons why we decided to build Place inside of Salesforce and connect this whole Salesforce ecosystem. So you can go from lead all the way through collecting cash and backwards and give visibility throughout the organization as to what the processes are, because there's a systematized way of doing it where you can let your human talent be really good at what they do and you can get rid of all of the backlog and administrative stuff that bogs them down and actually makes them spend more time trying to be data processors than engaging with your clients and actually solving real problems. And, you know, you mentioned before in one of our chats before the idea about when do you hire a customer success rep? And, you know, should you hire a customer success rep now just because you've always done it that way? Or with technology, is there a different way of doing it? And it goes back to what you were saying with the bank, right? Like you call the bank, you don't know if you're talking to a human or not. Customer success rep now with AI, it's a whole different world where hiring people, back to my earlier points, the most expensive thing. What if AI is good enough to be the front line of that customer success team?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's customer success, sales, I mean, one of the early roles out of college that I was looking at was a business development representative. And what it was when I entered the workforce to what it is now, they're totally different things. And, you know, I think if we looked at our peers to the left and right of us and said, well, that's how they built their company 5 years ago, or even a couple years ago, I mean, the leaps that I've seen take place and what technology offers across, you know, your core categories of business, it changes the profile that you need. And it also means for that job seeker how do you skill up and get those attributes and that skill set that makes you valuable? Because, you know, the gift of the gab may not be the only thing that makes you successful at sales now.
Yeah, we're about to go through a whole technology revolution with all the AI stuff. I mean, some of it's hype, but a lot of it's real. And if it's applied in the right way, I mean, it's going to change the way the business is conducted. And it already has.
Yeah. You know, one thing just I think because AI is so interesting and it's everyone's talking about it. For me, I like it to, do you have synthetic or genuine created content or information or data, what have you? And then the other aspect of it is it real or is it simulated, right? And that aspect of actually being able to simulate possible outcomes, whether you're launching a product and you want to, you know, automated QA, that's awesome. You want to go out and simulate what it's going to be like to sell the product in the marketplace. Those are tools that as salespeople, as marketing people, as customer service experts, we should leverage those. I think there's still like, well, AI, sure, 2024 will come around and we'll have another buzzword, agree. But how we actually leverage that synthetic capability, and as a content creator, that means that the genuine content that I create is for this purpose, right? We've refined it, or I've actually now been able to simulate what it's like to bring deals through a sales pipeline and I can be that much more effective.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just going to be fascinating as we see some of this stuff, and content creation itself becomes interesting because, like, is it, to your point, is it real? Is it simulated? Is it meaningful? Does it really capture what someone's thinking? Like, we're already seeing, especially with some of the images and stuff that are being produced, is like, is that a real image or is that a fake image? How am I going to know what's what? So we're in for a roller coaster over the next few years for sure as we figure it out. But I also think it's a really good segue to a question I like to ask on the show. What do you think founders, execs in tech, like, what should everyone be focused on right now?
Good, great question. So the first one is the retooling and the reskilling of your workforce. Whether you're a one woman or one man show just getting started, or you have, you know, a whole team, the capabilities of what, you know, are sitting at our fingertips, no pun intended, it has drastically changed the landscape about how companies can operate efficiently. And whether you need to re-architect how your team functions and specific processes, you need to reorganize your team. That's like a must because we're sitting at this precipice of, you know, wanting to be able to satisfy investors and drive profitability also at a very interesting time where, you know, I think those capabilities to actually, you know, commit to retooling and to reskilling, they're not easy jobs to go through, but it's a must do.
Your current talent, like taking someone who's doing job A and reskilling them to be able to do a completely different job, like there's a lot of overlap of the skill sets that are needed to do it. And again, back to the whole hiring piece, it's a lot easier to take your existing team and teach them new things than it is to go out and hire someone brand new and hope they can deliver on the things that you want them to deliver on.
Yeah. You know, especially myself, where I think one of my faults as a leader, maybe as I overanalyze things and I wait too long, is like, just jump on these opportunities right now. And that would also play to, I thought I was reading recently that the employment tenure at most organizations, it's the lowest it's ever been. It's like 2.5 years or less. And I mean, I know a lot of companies, they actually have their payback period, you know, fully analyzed. And it's like, oh, it takes me 12 months to make a payback on this hire. If you're only keeping someone for 2 years, well, why are they leaving? And oftentimes, you know, it's either they leave because of a leader, which is one, you know, piece you could have a whole separate conversation on, or it's the focus of their job. And every company is ready to reevaluate and should be reevaluating the technology and the team members and, you know, how the two come together. The other piece I would say is, you know, and I think this is, it's a necessary evil that we've seen a lot in the news recently. But from a layoff perspective, sometimes, you know, layoffs are bad executive decisions, business isn't doing well, and others are, because you're driving efficiency, because you're re-identifying your target market and your team is actually that much more efficient, is those restructurings, you come out in a better place. So moral of the story is that not every layoff or restructuring is because something bad's happening. It's because something is about to happen that's really good.
Yeah, and it's tough, right? Because layoffs suck just across the board. The company doesn't like doing them. People that are impacted by them certainly don't like the company doing them. And they suck across the board. But I agree with your point that, you know, sometimes they are because executives made bad decisions or something significantly bad happened in the business that forces the business to cut cost. But there is the especially right now with some of the tech innovation, like running a healthy business, you have to make some tough decisions as to where the efficiency is that you can gain for the business while growing the business. And some of this tech stuff is going to change that, where you can do things with technology at a greater volume than you can with hiring people. But I think it goes back to what you were saying about reskilling and retooling as the employee of, like, I need to not be just comfortable with what I'm doing now. I need to realize that the world is changing and tech's going to continue to change it, and figure out how do I continue to advance so that I'm moving into the roles that are going to be available in the next 5 to 10 years. So that I don't have to worry about, I'm just going to be replaced with technology.
Right. And, you know, that fear of, like, technology is going to replace me, I probably am against that. Sure, it's going to change our jobs, but it definitely will not replace us. Until I see, you know, ET Transformers going down my street, then I'm probably okay, although that could be happening any minute. You know, I think that aspect of, like, when do you do it? Because if you're too late, then you have a lot of, you know, meat on the bone that you have to trim. It's like our job as leaders is to be 20 steps ahead of where the company is today. And, you know, can you actually be reskilling and retooling and reorganizing so that it's preparing you for your next wave of growth and the next market that you're going to capitalize on and the new product? And, you know, maybe that means that hiring slows or hiring stops, but you retain your talent, because that, you know, you hit the nail on the head, which is, replacing great talent is so costly to the business.
Yeah, it's incredibly expensive. And, you know, loyalty, even with all the technology and all the changes, I mean, loyalty is one of the most important things to me. Like, if someone wants to be at the company, they're working their butt off to be at the company, they're delivering on whatever they need to deliver, I'm going to be, loyalty is a two-way street. That's obviously them being loyal to the company and to me. I'm also going to do everything I can to protect them and make sure that I make them successful. But it's also then looking at, where can I put them? Like, if they're in a role that I think I can replace with technology, I've now got to figure out how I help them move into where I want them to be.
Yeah. You know, it's, there is the capacity of being fractional. And I look at fractional as like, oh, could it be a fractional CMO at one company? But, like, maybe when you have these folks and the skill sets already in your organization, is, you know, can they be a fractional content marketer and a fractional community champion, right? Because, you know, roles in marketing are changing, and we need more. So I think that idea of, you know, whether you're hiring fractional roles to fulfill a gap in the organization, and we're all still getting comfortable with, you know, what part-time and contractor means, because those are nothing new, can that role of fractional actually apply to, you know, existing people within the organization? It's a delicate balance, but, you know, I think the biggest thing is you retain the talent that makes your organization unique and drives your growth.
Agreed. Well, Brian, I told you this was going to go fast. We're actually a little bit over on time. So a big thank you for coming on. I'm super excited to learn more as you get closer to the launch of the new company as to what you're up to, and I wish you a lot of success with it.
Thank you so much for having me, and really appreciate it.
Cool. Well, everyone else, Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday, so please subscribe, and we'll see you next week.